Okay, text 42. A yogi should see the same soul, so it's text 42. A yogi should see the same soul in all manifestations, for all that exists is a manifestation of different energies of the Supreme. In this way, the devotee should see all living entities without distinction. That is realization of the Supreme Soul. Purport. As stated in Brahma Samhita, not only does the Supreme Soul enter each and every universe, but he enters into the atoms. The Supreme Soul is present everywhere. In the dormant stage, and when one can see the presence of the Supreme Soul everywhere, one is liberated from material designations. The word sarva bhuteshu is to be understood as follows. Sarva bhuteshu. There are four different divisions of species. Dash. Living entities which sprout from the earth, living entities born of fermentation or germination, living entities which come from eggs, and living entities which come from the embryo. These four divisions of living entities are expanded into 8,400,000 species of life. A person who is freed from material designations can see the quality of spirit, presence everywhere, or in every manifested living entity. Less intelligent men think that plants and grass grow out of the earth automatically, but one who is actually intelligent has realized the self, and has realized the self, can see that this growth is not automatic. The cause is the soul, and the forms come out in material bodies under different conditions. By fermentation in the laboratory, many germs are born, but this is due to the presence of the soul. The material scientist thinks that eggs are lifeless, but that is not a fact. From Vedic scripture we can understand that living entities in different forms are generated under different conditions. Birds evolve from eggs, and beasts and human beings are born from the embryo. The perfect vision of the yogi or devotee is that he sees the presence of the living entity everywhere. And 43 says the same thing in different language. I'll read that. As fire is exhibited in different forms of wood, so under different conditions, the modes of material nature, under different conditions of the modes of material nature, the pure spirit soul manifests itself in different bodies. Purport. It is to be understood that the body is designated. Prakriti is an interaction by the three modes of material nature, and according to these modes, someone has a small body, someone has a very large body. For example, the fire in a big piece of wood appears very big, and in a stick, the fire appears small. Actually, the quality of fire is the same everywhere, but the manifestation of material nature is such that according to the fuel, the fire appears bigger or smaller. Similarly, the soul in the universal body, although of the same quality, is different from the soul in the smaller body. Paragraph. The small particles of soul are just like sparks of the large soul. The greatest soul is the Supersoul, but the Supersoul is qualitatively, quantitatively different from the small soul. The Supersoul is described in the Vedic literature as the supplier of all necessities of the smaller soul, Nityo Nityanam. One who understands this distinction between the Supersoul and the individual soul is above lamentation and is in a peaceful position. When the smaller soul thinks himself quantitatively as big as the larger soul, he's under the spell of Maya. That is not his constitutional position. No one can become greater, the greater soul, simply by mental speculation. Last paragraph. The smallness or greatness of different souls is described in the Varaha Purana as Swangsha Vibhinangsha. The Swangsha soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Vibhinangsha souls or small particles are eternally small particles, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mami Vamsan Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The small living entities are eternally part and parcel, and therefore it is not possible for them to be quantitatively as great as the Supersoul. So this is not new subject matter. We're all quite familiar with these teachings. It's certainly appropriate that these core understandings are within Kapila Dev's teachings, not just about Sankhya. So, analysis of matter and spirit, or more specifically, categories of matter and categories of spirit. So there's categories of spirit. And that's a science unto itself. It's part of Sankhya. It's part of, we're very familiar with this Sambandha Gyan term, the relationship of things with their source of emanation. So here, in this section, it's not going to the Bhagavan feature, just in how from the Bhagavan feature the other Paramatma Bhagavan Brahman features are resting. Rather, it's just the Paramatma feature, Supersoul. And then, because Supersoul has to do specifically with creation. No question. In Goloka Vrindavan, are there Supersouls? Answer, no. Rather, the way Prabhupada described is when the living entity, you know, this mysterious how did it happen event, where the living entity becomes rebellious, the Bhagavan Lord hides himself within the heart of the living entity as Paramatma, so he accompanies because he's the dearmost friend. And he remains concealed, except unto those who wish to know him again, and then he becomes revealed. But he's always accompanying the living entity. And that Supersoul is variously situated within the heart of every living entity, and as we're hearing here, within every atom. And it's out of his kindness to direct the wanderings of all living entity, Maya Jyakshina Prakriti. Suyate Sacharacharam, whether the moving or non-moving living entities. So directing the wanderings requires or includes directing the material energy, because the living entity is wandering in the material energy. So according to the desire and the deserve, the guna and the karma of the living entity, then circumstances are arranged. And those are the differentiations. So it's described here, these four different sources where souls receive bodies, and whether it's this one, that one, the other one, and then the variety that's manifest by one of those four processes, it's guna and karma regulated, and ultimately the Supersoul regulated. because they're his energies and they're under his direction. Step back from that, the bigger picture, like the Brahma Samhita picture, is the expansion of Mahavishnu and all the Purusha avatars. There's one of the Brahma Samhita prayers that specifically says they are expansions of Govinda. So we can say those are energies of Govinda. We can also correctly say they're the energies of the Purusha avatars, the internal potency and the external potency manifesting material creation, Mahavishnu and Brahma Devi, and the perverted reflection of Brahma Devi, the external energy. Anyway, specifically the realization, we discussed this a little bit yesterday, there's the theory. You know, we first get Bhagavad Gita and start reading Bhagavad Gita. We get some interesting concepts. Some of them they resonate and they're quite familiar, and we just have different language for saying these things than whatever our concepts were before, or religious teachings that we received before. They resonate, they perfectly match. Then there's some other ones that are, you know, like, Super Soul is everywhere, and there's Krishna in the spiritual world. Those concepts are new, and they're notional. So what's this specifically we talked yesterday? This is describing the realized state. Now, from the realized state, certainly Kapila Dev is in the realized state, and he's describing, as Krishna describes, how the conditioned soul sees, so the eye and mind of the conditioned soul, and then the liberated soul doesn't see like that. Energies of the Supreme Lord. Starting from the eye conception, the spiritual conception, then the mind worldly conception is dismissed. My hand, my arm, my body, and then there's I. So, through the agency of false ego, we lose the sense of self, and we incorrectly identify with the my thing. And it's just letting us know, Kapila Dev is letting Devahuti know, that the liberated soul doesn't see like that anymore. And it may seem strange to people who do see like that, to be in the presence of one who doesn't see like that. And then, you know, aside from their teachings, their conduct, their consciousness is different. And so they conduct themselves differently. Although maybe apparently doing some of the same things everybody else does, eating and walking and whatever, doing, working, family, etc. There's the sadhana and there's the sadhya state, the stage of perfection. Seeing altogether differently. Seeing altogether differently doesn't mean you stop activity. You just do those activities in different consciousness. In the purport of text 43, Prabhupada is expanding on this. He's taking the bigger flame, smaller flame. First of all, the flame is not the fire. The flame is an aspect of the fire. And it's because there's different flames. There's another place in the Bhagavatam where it even describes the color of flames, not just the size. And I know this from, you probably all also, from chemistry. One of the ways of testing whether something is this element or that element is you put it little particle in a flame, and it makes a red flame, a blue flame, an orange flame, or green flame, or whatever it is. And that verifies, yes, it's that element. So flames can have different color. Flames can have different sizes, just like bodies can have different colors and different sizes, and other aspects of variegatedness. So it doesn't mean different souls. One soul can, in one covering, have this particular species or that particular species or one variety or another variety. And the upadhi, or the sense of identifying with the body, designation is I am this or I am that. And what we're hearing is that misconception is dismissed in the liberated state. One may still act. Of course, there's the avadhuta stage where one may not, but one may still act in accord with their given position of embodiment. So a liberated spirit soul in a woman's body may behave like this, and a liberated spirit soul in a man's body may behave like that. Or a brahmana liberated soul may behave like a brahmana, and so forth. So it doesn't mean we become like homogenized or something. A smoothie, everyone's the same. That's the liberated state. No variegatedness, everyone's bland. Individuality may be there, both arising from the soul itself and arising from the covering. It's just that the distinction is one doesn't identify with the covering. For example, you know, the body will become old and die. So that happens because that's what bodies do. But one may not identify with the old and the dying. Just as an example. So just, we're getting a review of basic Bhagavad Gita knowledge and the consciousness of detachment through knowledge. And of course there's the higher thing than detachment, there's the platform of devotional service, which a subset of which is knowledge and detachment. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadahaitukam. It's subset. So our last point, our studying of scripture, studying Bhagavad Gita, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, it's part of bhakti. It's hearing and chanting. It's not cultivation of knowledge. It's because both the source, especially because of the source, also because of our intention, we're hearing and getting the training, that the purpose of this is not just to be fortified with knowledge so that we're big, we got knowledge, and those that don't have knowledge are small. It's nurturing devotion. Like, you know, drops of water nourish the plant so the plant can grow. And the plant or the creeper of bhakti is what we're doing, watering that through the process of hearing and chanting. So that's how we should internalize and practically apply that which will enhance our bhakti. So any comments or questions? Shorter class this morning because of schedule. Yeah.
I didn't ask. Maharaj mentioned the Mahavishnu and then Narayan for the avatars of Krishna, Mahavishnu and Krishna.
I didn't, but okay, go ahead.
You can use like sight.
Okay.
So I was wondering in that regard that we talk in terms of time with them, that this Vishnu came from this Vishnu and this Vishnu expanded to this Vishnu.
Yeah. However, it's not a chronological. Once upon a time there was no Mahavishnu, and some time passed, and then it's not like that. They're eternally existing, manifest or not.
So when this said it comes from, like this Vishnu came from this Vishnu, how can we understand?
They're eternally existing. They're just it's a description of relationship. It's not a description of a chronological event. That's like living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. It's eternally a fact. Where they're situated and all of that is, there, you know, changes from time to time through passage of time. But in the timeless reality, there's an ontological or a relationship description, a sambandha description. Krishna is the basis and support. He's the pratishtha of everything. So it's an ontological, not a chronological description. Is that all right? No, not all right. You got.
It's difficult to, I mean, because I'm born in the time, born with the time, it's difficult to understand.
Well, because we're accustomed to thinking of time that's past, present, future. But these are not past, present, future events. Is there such a thing as eternal time? Yes. In the realm of eternal time, are there eternal events or eternal pastimes? Yes. Can we understand them? No. With you know, through the lens of time as we know it, we can't understand them. But we can accept, at least conceptually, it's different than this. It's that there's events that are timeless. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it, you know, in reverse order. This is in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts, that book that he sent out in 1896. Do not ask the misleading question. When? Because that's the, you know, is it a when question? It's a misleading, the question itself is misleading because it's not an event within time. When the living entities were created or when the living entities were enthralled. It's an event, but not a chronological event. When were the living entities created? They're eternally part of the Supreme Lord. But they're emanations from the Supreme Lord. Their energy emanates from the energetic. That's a nice, you know, the question itself helps one contemplate sat as opposed to asat. You know, if we look at sat, that which is eternally existing, In through the lens of asat, we spin out. What can't be? Because it doesn't match asat. What can be, in fact, and asat is the reflection of sat. Yes.
Brahman feature has only Sat feature, Sat, and Paramatma has a Sat and Chit, and Bhagavan has a Sat Chit and Ananda.
Yes.
Well, you know, when Narmi perceived Paramatma, you know, he became ecstatic and he experienced that bliss. Actually.
Yeah, it's described here also in the previous verses.
So, I mean, why then only Sat and Chit but not Ananda?
Well, it doesn't mean that, you know, doesn't mean there's no Ananda. Super soul has no Ananda. He's deprived. the fullness is not experienced. You know, the fact, yeah. There's the Ananda of Brahman, realization. There's the ananda. There's ananda in Brahman realization. There's ananda in greater ananda in Paramatma realization. And there's a greater full ananda realization in Bhagavan. So those features are prominent. The realization, the Paramatma realization is realization of the Sat and Chit features. Doesn't mean there's no ananda. Yes?
Can you explain or define, when we say Sankirtan Yajna, how broad or narrow that definition is in terms of which activities are or are not included in, when we say Sankirtan Yajna, is our only...
Well, like anything, it's very easy. There's broad and there's narrow definitions. Like anything, there's broad and there's narrow definitions. Here's a broad one. When Srila Prabhupada was residing in Vrindavan, they were building the guest house. Prabhupada wanted everything to be built so they, according to Guru Kripa told me this, that they had 300 workers around the clock in shifts. So when Prabhupada was sitting in his room, and early in the morning, the devotee said, Prabhupada, would you like us to, you know, stop the workers while you're resting? He said, no, that is Sankirtan. That's a broad definition. And then there's narrow. And then there's somewhere in between. So, commonly, Sankirtan is literally, we have musical instruments and we sing Krishna's name together in the call and response method. And then Prabhupada expanded that to include book distribution. There's the Mridanga and there's the Brihat Mridanga. So book distribution is also Sankirtan. Although we may not be having musical instruments as we're distributing the books. It's another kind of Sankirtan.
Deity worship?
That only because, yes, only because deity worship is preceded by and followed by, but it's in a different category. It's archana. Shravanam and kirtanam are in another category, and then archanam. But archanam includes, it's incomplete without the holy name. Something else? Yes.
While performing devotion service, we put 100% of our heart.
That's good.
Yes, the time goes, when the service continues, and when the body gets exhausted, and even the smallest service, rather than putting our heart, then it becomes just like a mere duty. And finally, when we get even further exhausted, even such a small service will become a
burden.
So how to retain that the spiritual strength too, so that we don't give up our heart and
practice. Yeah, again, there's a whole range of responses to that. Someone was just sharing this with me. Oh, it was Mahatma Prabhu was giving a class in Mayapur about an experience that he had when he was at one point in time. He was living in San Francisco, I believe it was, and I may have the places and the names wrong, but as I recall, it was Bhakti Das, and they were doing this and that and the other thing, construction and something, and he told Prabhupada, it's very difficult to complete my chanting every day, and so should I do less service? And Prabhupada said, do both. And I heard a recording of one class where Prabhupada was, it sounded like, kind of like a wild man's, the tone of his voice. or quality of his voice. Prabhupada, I have difficulty completing my chanting. I work so many hours. What should I do? And Prabhupada said the same thing, do both. Now that's, you know, a goal, and that may not be something that I feel I can do. Now, with instructions comes the ability to do. But then that's a matter of faith, that I have faith in the instruction and the instructor, and that there's ability to do beyond my ability. So, practice strengthens, mercy comes through that. You know, one's capacity to render service expands through the medium of sincere service. It's kind of like physical therapy. I mean, not the same, but it's kind of like, that's the material example, and the spiritual example is Krishna empowers over a period of time. So, how to handle it? That's one way to handle it. Another way is you scale back and you stay within the parameters of accepting service that is within your parameter, within your present capacity, and don't feel bad about it.
In that case, see what happens, is, Maharaj. We really, start to think, am I degrading in my service capability?
I understand the mental, beat yourself up program is well known by all of us. So, at the same time, be realistic, and whatever it is, the thing to look at is, am I slackening in my service mood? Is that what's happening, or am I just being honest that a balanced position is this? That's kind of stretching it, and beyond that is not wise. And that when I stretch it, it shouldn't be like, always straight. It's good to always push ourselves or extend ourselves, again, using physical therapy as an example. The therapist, I had a knee problem, so the therapist said in the course of training, my training tells me that a little exertion is good, and when it starts to hurt, that tells you don't continue to exert. Kind of like yoga. You stretch, but you don't stretch to, you can hurt your body, like big time. People have done that. They've tried this and that and the other yoga, and they can damage their body long time, if not permanently, just by extremism. So Krishna's kind, he's not like you get permanently spiritually damaged if you extend yourself beyond what you should be extending yourself. But so rather than beat yourself up with, oh, I'm a bum, you do that a little bit of stretch and you stay stretched. Then the capacity to stretch increases. So it's not just be comfortable, and it's not overdue. You understand that zone of extending. And then, there's certainly, big time, another aspect of service, which is reading and hearing and chanting. That's not non-service, and then there's service. I gave to Rasamrita this text of our automatic process, which touches on this. It's written by Burjan for leaders. It was given to the GBC body to evaluate in 2007 or something like that, maybe before then. And the emphasis of the article is not just service that's expanding the movement and then automatically I'll advance. There must be also the proper hearing and chanting so that I have the spiritual strength and purity to expand the movement effectively. So, does that help? Okay. Something else? Yes?
The last Supersoul is an expansion of Vishnu.
Supersoul is an expansion of Vishnu.
Yeah.
Supersoul is one of the Vishnu forms.
Okay. So when we cultivate a relationship with Supersoul, is that...
Not exactly cultivate a relationship with Supersoul. The language is a little... needs a little editing. accepting the arrangements of Supersoul, feeling that, you know, the events of life, the configurations of matter today, is under the jurisdiction of Supersoul. And I honor the Supersoul as the controller, not me. And so I accept. And this arrangement or that arrangement is appropriate for me for a variety of reasons. Like one of them is learning things, another one is receiving the fruits of my past activity, you know, completely fairly. And so I honor the position of Supersoul. So the language of relationship is not like, it's something like this Ananda topic. It's not like there's no, you can't talk about relationship with Supersoul because there's no such thing. Relationship is only with Bhagavan. There's a relationship of the subordinate to the master. And I accept he's the master. And I'm serving. And I follow the indications of the master. Because the indications of the master come externally as well as internally. I should confirm the internal ones with scripture, but you know, he's guiding and there's something going on here. But it's not the fullness of relationship as with Bhagavan. Does it address your question? Okay. Yes?
So in this verse it was saying, in this way the devotee should see all living entities without distinction. That's the realization of the Supreme Soul.
Without distinction means the external type of distinction.
So my question is, like, at least for someone like me, like you were alluding to the coverings of the sword.
Mm.
So when I'm interacting with devotees, for most of the times I'm looking at the coverings, and likewise, but there seems to be a huge gap between what the verse is saying and where we need to be. So in the meantime, like...
Well, it's the gap is between what we know and where we are. It's okay. You do the... You stretch a little bit. I'm not there yet, but let me try to, according to my capacity, remember the teaching and, to my capacity, act accordingly. And then by doing so, capacity increases. Your realization increases. Your Krishna consciousness increases. Because you're trying to act according to Krishna's indication. Or here, Kapila Dev's indication. That stretching is an offering. It's an expression of devotion. It's, you know, my heart has been stirred by this teaching, and let me have Krishna smile. He sees that I'm trying. I'm not there yet, but I'm trying. Okay. Yeah.
This question is about Lord Brahma becoming angry when the Kumaras didn't develop the praja. Like,
okay.
The question is, like, he was a realized soul at that time because Lord Krishna came and...
etc.
So, I was thinking, like, why? What was the reason for him to become angry? Because bringing a soul from the spiritual world, this is a place of misery. So, I mean, I'm thinking, like, he should be happy because, you know, they are not facilitating bringing a soul from the spiritual world. And similarly, Daksha becoming angry. So, I just wanted to understand.
Five, you know, you've just threw a whole bunch of things. So, One, it's not that the four Kumaras were brought from the spiritual world. The living entities that come into this world via Lord Brahma or via the Prajapatis who are from Lord Brahma, they're part of the conditioned souls. They're the samasti. Samasti is a term that means the sum total of living entities in the material sphere. Garbhadakshay Vishnu, when the universes expand from the body of Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu expands from the body of Mahavishnu, and with him, when he enters into each universe, a universe's worth, a portion of the totality of living entities are taken with him into that universe. And they're within his body as all living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu, so some portion. They're within his body. And that's where the four Kumaras come. They're not from this, you know. They're conditioned souls that were in a dormant state, and now they're still in a dormant state, and now they become manifest with bodies from Lord Brahma. That's just a little editing in your question.
Yes, Maharaj, I understand.
I know that's not the crux of your question. I'm just editing your question. Now, when Lord Brahma gets angry at the Kumaras, it's not like our getting angry, or certainly not like Daksha's getting angry. Because Daksha's getting angry was based on pride and attachment to his conception that karmakanda rituals are what are best for my sons, and you, Narada, you've deprived them of that which is best for my sons in the name of renunciation. Shame on you. You're presenting yourself as a sadhu, but you're the opposite of sadhu. I curse you. That's another. I'm the one that's, you're not. I'm the one that's the sadhu. I'm this and I'm that. That's where his anger was coming from. And it's different than Lord Brahma. This gets into a very delicate area. That is, to, you know, the area that Lord Brahma is, on the one hand, he's the original preceptor of our sampradaya. He's the receiver of transcendental knowledge of all the Vedas, and he manifests the Vedas. I mean, we can go on listing his qualifications. So we don't want to enter into that very, very, very treacherous, dangerous, don't go there territory of evaluating, you know, such a personality. We don't want to make offense. At the same time, we need to have something, discrimination going on, that says why such a behavior. So I'm just, you know, the preamble of the response is, let us be very careful when we consider such a personality. Prabhupada was always very careful. And when the disciples would ask questions that weren't in the category of being very careful, he would smash them. I mean, that one morning walk conversation where someone was asking Prabhupada, why did Brahma, ta-ta-ta, you know, some, and, you know, but he's supposed to be a perfect being, in Prabhupada, like thunder. He is perfect enough. Like, don't go there. At the same time, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is qualified as he is qualified, he speaks of Lord Brahma as you know, there's degrees of perfection. Perfect enough to have all these wonderful realizations of Brahma Samhita, that he prayers. At the same time, after all of that, he still has a material desire. And that material desire is to create a universe. And the creating of a universe desire comes from contact with the mode of passion. He's not the same as Vishnu. He's in contact with the mode of passion. The modes come from the personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma is influenced by the mode of passion. He's in charge of it, and to a degree he's under its control, both. His intention of service is his protection, same with us. Bhakti gives protection. But, you know, there's... Anyway, so his anger was arising from you can say, two things. One is he had a service to do, and these four Kumaras were to assist him, and they just flatly declined. He didn't, you know, say some angry thing, but he felt angry. And from that, then there was something that came. So that's all part of the process of creation. In that sense, his anger, not like, okay, now I'm supposed to get angry for the purpose of creation, so I'll get angry so the next thing can happen and the next thing can happen. Wasn't that kind of, you know, conscious, now I'll get angry because... But it's part of his service to manifest Lord Shiva that is the product of his anger, because that's part of the process of creation. And then it describes, you know, and that's when Rudra appears and he expands into 11 Rudras. There's a function in the creation that's served by those 11 Rudras. And the false egoistic principle that is embodied in Rudra. Because you can't have material activity. You know, activity of forgetfulness, which is, you know, the whole program in material existence. So it was just one of the unlimited possible ways. That was the way that the Lord Brahma arranged for Rudra to make his appearance through the anger of Brahma. So he's faultless.
The premise of the question was the soul was coming, the living entity was coming from the spiritual world. I was thinking that because that was the time, it was the start of the creation.
But at the start of creation, even before Lord Brahma appears, where does Lord Brahma appear from? Does he come from the spiritual sky? He's from the living entities that are within the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And then from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu appears a lotus. First it's a bud. Srimad Bhagavatam says that bud, and then the maturing of the bud into a lotus, is the totality of the karma of all those living entities. That's what the lotus is. So there's the living entities, and then the karma of living entities. And then Lord Brahma is the first of those living entities that appears atop the lotus on the flower. But he's one of those. Not from the spiritual sky. And then the Kumara is not from the spiritual sky, from those living entities that are within the body of Mahavishnu during the total of, anyhow, not from the spiritual sky. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's understood. But then does it mean that the living entities always exist in the, in the material, in the Mahavishnu? I heard
there's
glands of Vishnu, they come into...
But where before the glands of Vishnu, where were they? In the body of Mahavishnu. Before that, where were they? They were in the creation, and then when the creation withdrawn, they were brought within the body of Mahavishnu. It's cyclical, right? Just being recycled souls.
But was there again, this is going into time, but was there a time that they came into the body of Vishnu?
No. Well, it's not... This is the origin of the jiva, the fall of the jiva question. And I'll just repeat what Bhakti Vinod Thakur said. Don't ask the misleading question. The way that you're thinking is in terms of time as we know it. And this is an event that's not within time as we know it. It's an event. Sounds like double talk, Maharaj. Well, there are events that are not within time as we know it. It's not that once upon a time there was Krishna. Krishna was feeling lonely. He looked at his watch and said, I think it's time for some living entities. Boop, and there's some living entities. It's not an event within time. It's an event. Yes.
I'm not heading into a dangerous area, but at last time you came, at the end of the class, there was a debate amongst the devotees about you were speaking on, you know, the fall of...
Oh, so God.
I won't talk about that. a small question came, which is when the jiva falls, do they fall first to the position of Brahma, or do they fall to a body based on the degree of envy?
I can only repeat what our founder Acharya has said, and it's based upon scripture. And the Bhagavatam says specifically, either Brahma or one of the higher living entities in the upper regions. That's what the Bhagavatam says. Now, the math might be confounding. Well, there's so many living entities, and how can it be, and all of that. I can't answer the math question. I can only say what scripture says. Yes?
Maharaj, actually, like Krishna says, like those who worship demigods will go to their respective place. And
well, they may. They may not also.
Okay. Those who worship me will come to my abode naturally. So in the case, like if you look at the Shivalok, it's at the edge of like the actually Vaikuntha realm. So that means that Shiva has got the ability to deliver the conditioned soul.
No.
Okay, then the souls that are going to Shivalok, like
it's not Vaikuntha.
Okay.
It's another region.
But in that, it is actually in that realm, like Maharaj. Like,
what is what actually?
The Kailash, like it's when you look at the.
Oh, here comes another complicated topic: the abodes of Lord Shiva. I invite you. Just don't say anything just yet. Just like relax a little bit, okay? You like want to go to the next question. But so listen to the Brahma Samhita presentation on the abodes of Vishnu, abodes of Lord Shiva. It's specifically on the verse Goloka Namni Nijadamni Tale Chatasya. I've discussed it in detail. There are multiple abodes. So there's Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham, and Goloka Dham. So Mahesh Dham is not in Devi Dham. Mahesh Dham is not in Vaikuntha or Hari Dham. So where is it? And then that's, with that question comes scriptural references. You know, the PowerPoint is also there with the scriptural references that say, basically, four. He is a very mystical person. Sada Shiva is in the lower region of Haridam, as Ayodhya is in the upper region of Haridam. And then there's Shivaloka, that you read in Briha. Just relax a little bit. Shivaloka is where Gopakumar meets Lord Shiva. He's coming down from, so, because he was in the Brahmajyoti, and then he sees Lord Shiva coming down, and he's in the region called Shivaloka, which is beyond the covering of Devi Dham. And then there's Kailash, which is in, you know, the popular demigod that Hindus worship, resides in Kailash, which is within the creation. And then there's a fourth, which is Mahakalapur. And Mahakalapur has different descriptions of where that is. One of the prominent ones, not the only one, is at the bottom of the universe, where the Rudras are saying when it's time for devastation, they're in Mahakalapur, and that Mahakala is the great time. It's the destruction of the universe. They assist Anantashesh, whose flames come from his mouth, and they do their dance to enrage and, you know, expand the flames to end the universe. So there's four different realms for four different, but not, you know, different but not different manifestations of Lord Shiva. So he's a complicated, you know, topic.
So those who those who already gone,
go to the next question.
No, Maharaj. Actually, those who are really gone to those demigods' planets, and don't they really wish back again? You know, like to go to Krishna Lok or Goloka Vrindavan. Don't they desire from that point?
They may. They may not. They may just be party time. The sons of Kuvera. Party time. They may or may not. More? I'm sure there's more.
I'm sure. Actually, like what I learned is like any living entity that goes beyond the Viraja point, you know, like then they don't take birth in this material world again. So that's why, you know, like I thought to ask, because I've seen like in the...
It's complex. The short answer is Shiva Tattva is very complex. It's not Vaikuntha. Although Sadashiva is in the lower regions of Vaikuntha, that's unique. It's not that worshippers of Lord Shiva, the demigod Lord Shiva, the Hindus that worship Lord Shiva, you know, etc., they go to Sadashiva Loka. That's not their conception. They don't conceive of him in that way. No more questions, please. Yes.
Yesterday we were talking about Hanumanji, and he said that Hanuman stayed back because he was given the service of continuing to glorify Lord Ram.
That's what the Bhagavatam says.
So I was hoping to understand, are there any examples that after Ramayana has happened that Hanuman is still continuing the glorification of Lord Ram?
Well, Bhagavatam 5th Canto, Chapter 19. We did some of it yesterday. And, you know, by receiving, in his deity form, receiving worship and, you know, people glorifying Ram. Anyway, there's one. One is enough. I exactly how he manifests that service in various forms. What are some examples of those various forms of how he manifests that service? He's engaged that way, and he inspires others by his engaging in that way. We hear of him doing that, and he's a great devotee, so we do that too. You know, Ram Bhaktas do that too. I see a hand over there on the left. And then just three more questions. I'm going to end because the clock doesn't stop. It keeps moving. One, two, three, and we're done. Go ahead. Yes, you're first.
On Saturday class, I had asked a question where essentially it was the where you are and what you know. And you had referred to a verse in from Bhagavatam 11th Canto.
Wonderful verse.
But actually, you had said you hadn't referenced it. I was looking. I didn't know which verse it was.
You want me to send it to you? I can send it to you. No problem. Okay. That's your question? I'll send it to you. Yes. Yuga Kishore, you have something?
Yes, ma'am. Maharaj, last time you came, quoting Isopanishad, this Mayavadis, there is a special hell, and that's where they're condemned. I've been meditating actually past almost 6-7 months on this. I mean, they do a lot of sadhana and I mean, there are certain Upanishads where, you know, only if you attend, if you do this, you'll attain Brahman realization. And somehow I could not digest that knowledge. You know. Special helmets, is there any scope for their deliverance? And sometimes Shastra speaks very heavily. So.
No, I'm not sure the reference that you're making, but from the sounds of what you're saying, nothing in this world is permanent. Hell is not a permanent place either. Or take it the other way. Is Krishna kind or cruel?
Kind.
Yeah. So, his kindness will... One has to say, yes, I'd like your kindness. Very nice. But, you know, this kindness is there anyways. The sun shines regardless. Last question, but not least.
Thank you, Maharaj. Fairly simple, straightforward question. How old is the universe?
How old is the universe? Let me get my calculator out. Well, the duration of the universe I can just give some numbers, but I have to multiply them out. So the duration of the universe lasts for 100 years of Lord Brahma's life. So multiply by 100, 365 days. So 100 times 365 times 1,000 cycles of the four yugas. So 1,000 each day of Brahma has 1,000 yuga cycles. And each yuga cycle is 4,320,000,000 years times 1,000 equals one day. And then there's his night times two. That's, you know, in years. Times 300... Did I do the 365 already? Okay, so that's 1 year times 100. That's how long the universe is. And you've got a number?
He's got a... Like 155 trillion years.
Okay.
We are in the middle, like...
Yeah, we're in the middle. It's like 11:30. It's not noon yet. Time for Gayatri coming up. Okay, I'm going to end. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.